The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on October 5th, 1988 in Atlanta, Georgia. The class begins with a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Chapter 20 Madhya Lila. Text 218. Emato Brahmando Madhya Sabar Purakash Sapta Dipe Nabakunde Jahara Bilash. Within the universe, the Lord is situated in different spiritual manifestations. These are situated on seven islands in nine sections. Thus, their pastimes are going on. Purport. The seven islands are mentioned in the Siddhanta Siromoni. Bhumirathaṁ śirāsindhur adhakastaṁ jambudīpaṁ prahurācca bhajjā ardhe nyasmin dvīpa shatkasya dhyāmye kṣārakṣiradhyam bhūdhinam niveshah sākam tatasalmala matrakosham krañcham ca gomedaka puskarecha dvayor dvayor antaram ekam ekam Samudra Yodvipam Udhaharanti. The seven islands or dvipas are known as Jambu, Saka, Salmali, Kusa, Kroncha, Gomeda, or Plaksha, and Pushkara. The planets are called dvipa. Outer space is like an ocean of air, just as there are islands in the watery ocean. These planets in the ocean of space are called dvipas or islands in outer space. There are nine khandas known as Bharata, Kinara, Hari, Kuru, Hiranmaya, Ramyaka, Ilabhita, Bhadrasva, and Ketumala. These are different parts of the Jambudvipa. A valley between two mountains is called Khanda or Varsha. Sarvatra Prakashthar Bhakti Sukkade Jagatera Dharma Nashi Dharma Stapite. The Lord is situated in all the universes in different forms just to please His devotees. Thus the Lord destroys irreligious principles and establishes religious principles. Purport. In the material world, the Lord is situated in different archamurtis, deities, in the temples just to decrease the material activities of the conditioned soul and increase His spiritual activities. Particularly in India, there are many temples throughout the country. Devotees may take advantage of them and go see their Lord at Jagannath Puri, Vrindavana, Prayag, Mathura, Hardwar, and Vishnu Kanchi. When the devotees travel to these places and see the Lord, they become very happy in devotional service. Ihar madde karohoi avatari ganan jaiche vishnu chirikrama nishinha vaman. Of these forms, some are considered incarnations. Examples are Lord Vishnu, Lord Trivikram, Lord Nrsimha, and Lord Vamana. Ashta Dhiti Bedha Nama Bhedira Karan Chakraghi Dharan Bedha Suno Sanatan. My dear Sanatan, just hear from me as I tell you how the different Vishnu Murtis hold their weapons, beginning with the disc, and how they are named differently according to the placement of objects in their hands. Dakkinadhu Hastahaite Vamanadha Pajanta Chakradi Astradharana Gananar Anta. The procedure for counting begins with the lower right hand, goes to the upper right hand, the upper left hand, and the lower left hand. Lord Vishnu is named according to the order of the objects are held in his hands. Siddhartha Samhita Kode Chovishmurti Ganan Tarmote Chohi Kohiyagi Chakradi Dharan. According to the Siddhanta Samhita, there are 24 forms of Lord Vishnu. First I shall describe, according to the opinion of that book, the location of the weapons beginning with the disc. The 24 forms are Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradumna, Aniruddha, Keshava, Narayana, Madhava, Govinda, Vishnu, Madhusudhana, Trivikrama, Vamana, Sridhara, Hrishikesha, Padmanava, Damodara, Purushottama, Achyuta, Narsingha, Janardana, Hari, Krishna, Arokshaja, and Upendra. And it gives a description of how each of these different forms holds their weapons. Then, in verse 237, explains Harai Shisha Pancharatre Kohe Sholojan Taramote Kohe Ebe Chakradi Dharan. According to the Haya Shisha Pancharatra, there are 16 personalities. I shall now describe that opinion of how they hold their weapons. So it's two different scriptures giving their explanation. The only difference, though, is that Keshava is described as holding lotus, conch, club, and disc, and Madhava is dust, club, conch, and lotus. And Narayana are also presented as holding their weapons differently. So little difference between Hayasirsha Pancharatra and the previous one which was mentioned, the Siddhanta Siromuni. Well, Chaitanya doesn't clarify. He gives both the opinions. Maybe sometimes different forms switch hands. Who knows? Two opinions. Even in spiritual life, there's sometimes a difference of opinion. So Lord Chaitanya respects both because they're superior gurus. So he gives both their opinion. So in spiritual life, sometimes there's difference of opinion on some of these details. In the details, there's difference from one guru to another, one acharya to another, between Ramanuja and Madhva. Slight difference may be there, but on the basic things, there's no difference. So in the philosophy, there's a unity. That's why Prabhupada stressed that we follow the philosophy. Sometimes the interpretation of the description of the universe may vary from one person to the next. Some people may have a different interpretation. What is a dvipa? What is a varsha? In order to explain. But these little differences do not affect the ultimate conclusions of what is the purpose of life. Because the Vedas are so vast and they're covered from different points of view and by different great rishis, sometimes there's a little difference in vision between what's more important. Bhaktivinoda Thakur stressed that we shouldn't be distracted by this, because the basic philosophy is what's important. Like sometimes it stresses that the order of the planets or something, someone may differ from that opinion. This doesn't really affect the ultimate conclusion in regard to the transcendental world, in regard to our eternal relationship with Krishna. In trying to explain, because now of course we have some information from astronomy, and we take that information to be absolute and true. So if we hear something different from the Vedas, then we think maybe the Vedas are wrong. We get doubts. We have concepts now, planets, stars, things like that. In those days, the people had no concept whatsoever. They just could see little dots in the sky. They didn't know what they were. So they had to explain. Now you can say, if you say outer space, if you say planets, people have a concept in their mind, either from science fiction or from science or from whatever. They these are like conceptions which have become accepted in society. But before, they were very conceptual. They were very ephemeral for the ordinary people to understand, because they had no experience what was actually beyond this planet. So in explaining, sometimes they would use allegory or examples, figurative language. Sometimes they would be explaining, maybe even our own modern perceptions are not accurate. We don't know. We have a thing already taught to us. We've been conditioned by a certain idea, which may or may not ultimately be correct. Some pundits say that the order of the stars mentioned in the Vedas is in the order of their influence on us, not in the order of their distance. Others hold that no, it's the order of distance. In modern thought, there's some difference of opinion like that. So that's why the cosmology is a bit complex situation. Then one Veda describes things in one way, another Veda another. Like here it says there's 9 varshas, and the varshas are the spaces between the mountains. You see. But then someone may say, well, actually, a varsha is really what it means is a planet, and what a dvipa means is a solar system. and so on. Because the terms there, in Vedic debate, first thing you have to do is establish a definition. So you can define some, two people are looking at an apple, they can say, this is apple. But when there's something which neither of the persons had seen, either through telescope or any, you know, but they've heard, so sometimes the definitions which are handed down, people may be talking about the same thing but giving different names. So that's why of all the things in the Vedas, the description of the cosmology, we find the most difficulty in trying to match it up with the modern, because possibly there's a difference in what we consider, what the Vedas consider a Varsha or a Dvipa may be different than what the scientists consider. Until we can match up the definitions, it'll be very difficult. And then verify, they may also be not telling us the truth. It's not unusual for scientists to jimmy around with the different nomenclatures and results to prove their own points. Darwin's theory is proven, according to some scientists, but Sadaputta Prabhu has gone through all the ancient bone references, and he found that wherever they found this Java man, the Neanderthal man, they also, around the same time period, they were also modern man's bones. But what they would do is the scientists, they wanted to prove that there was evolution. So they would purposefully give a different standard of rejecting to see whether one way of doing it is you just ignore something, like, okay, this one didn't fit in, it doesn't, just sweep it under the rug. The second way is you reject it as being inaccurate. So what they would do is they would give two different standards, like for testing the Neanderthal man, they would close, you know, all their eyes, all right, this is all right. You know, they wouldn't even test it. It was just like, you know, just real basic thing. But the other one, they'd say, well, was the wind blowing? Was this earth this way? Was it that? Was the scientist wash his hands before he and after? You know, he'd give all kind of, you know, okay, this can't be, there was some doubt there, okay. And then this way they, you know, it's all right, see, now we proved evolution. But he went through all these records and found that if you apply the same criteria to accept or reject a scientific evidence to both, then you'll find that the modern man bones that they found 2 million years ago, 3 million years ago, also passed the muster. They weren't using the same criteria. If they applied the criteria they used to reject the modern bone, they'd have to reject also the caveman bone. It's just they used two separate criteria. So like scientists do also present what they want to present at that time to push their own thing. It's not, the cheating propensity is there. So Srila Prabhupada has requested certain disciples, I know he requested Harikesh, I think he must have requested Sadaputta and Bhakti Sub Damodar. One day I was in the room listening to him explaining to Harikesh Swami about how he had to rewrite the fifth canto and study the, find out what the actual cosmology of the Vedas was, and then present that in the Mayapur temple. And I was just doing some menial service there, and he looked at me and he says, you should figure out the universe also. You know, wow, this one statement, you know, like, we still can't sleep over there. Like, so, at least qualifying. So definitely critical. The Prabhupada wanted to challenge the scientists even on their own ground in different places. There are many scientific evidence in the Bhagavatam, like the development of embryo, the atomic theory, which do match up, which are even have been verified by modern science. Veda said that we change all the cells in our body in 12 years. Originally, scientists said, no, we change in 7 years. Then now recently, a couple of years ago, they found, no, it's actually 12 years. So there are many things like that. The Vedas are proven correct in the end. But as far as this universal situation, it's difficult because you have to first of all see the definitions are matching. And because the explanations are made to people who have never had any concept about what is beyond the planet. Therefore, the rishis, to make it real simple for them, can explain it in such a way to one king or another king, they may slightly explain it differently. So you have to match up all the definitions. But we shouldn't get confused by that or have that as a cause of doubt. Actually, the real point is the philosophy in relationship to the soul.
to reincarnation, to life, to Krishna. What is our relationship with Krishna? These are the actual essence of the philosophy that we should focus on. The other things are there just to help us so we don't have to waste so much time in useless research. Modern society works so hard, but they waste so much time in researching some things which are really not beneficial. They research for the sake of researching. Just like this Olympics, they work so hard. Even they try to sneak and take steroid drugs and things just so they can win the gold medal, get some name and fame. So there's a lot of artificial situations that simply waste a valuable human life in the modern society where people engage their valuable intelligence in everything except trying to understand who is God. So that is what the Vedas have to offer, which is above everything else, is the science of self-realization. So here Lord Chaitanya explains that Swayam Bhagavan Ar Lila Purushottam E Dui Nam Dhore Vrajendra Nandan. Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, indicated as the son of Maharaj Nanda, has two names. One is Swayam Bhagavan and the other is Lila Purushottama. Puriravarana Rupe Puriravadeshe Nava Vyuha Rupe Nava Murti Purukashe. Lord Krishna personally surrounds Dwarka Puri as his protector. In different parts of the Puri, in nine places he expands in nine different forms. Chattaro Vasudevadhyā Narayana Nrsimhako Hayagrivo Mahakrodho Brahmā Cheti Navoditaha. The nine personalities mentioned are Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradumna, Aniruddha, Narayana, Narsingha, Hayagriva, Varaha, and Brahma. This verse is found in Laghu Bhagavatamrita. The Brahma mentioned herein is not a living entity. Sometimes when there is a scarcity of living entities to take charge of Brahma's post, Mahavishnu expands himself as Lord Brahma. This Brahma is not considered to be a living entity. He is an expansion of Vishnu. Prakash bilashire koilu bhivaran swangshirbeda ebe suno sanatan. I have already described the pastime in Prakash forms. Now please hear about the different personal expansions. Now, it's interesting to note here that how big a position being a Brahma is. Sometimes you don't find anyone to be a Brahma. So Vishnu himself has to expand himself to be a Brahma. In ISKCON, sometimes it's hard to find temple presidents. We need expansions. Sometimes living entity, they don't want to take responsibility for Krishna, to take the responsibility of being a Brahma and also to be qualified to do that. One requires a tremendous pious activity. To give that position to someone who is not pious would create havoc. So rather than put someone as a Brahma who is unqualified, Mahavishnu comes himself sometime, if there is no one qualified. That indicates how important the position of Brahma is, that sometimes they don't find someone to fill the spot. So when, as I mentioned, that when Lord Krishna indicated, here we're discussing Lord Krishna in Dwarka. So when Krishna was in Dwarka, Narada Muni went to him and asked about what would be the future of the conditioned souls in Kali Yuga. And he told him that, I'm going to come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I'm going to come and you should tell Brahma and you should tell Shiva and other principal demigods that they should all be ready to come and assist me. I'm going to be a devotee and give out love for Godhead and experience love for Godhead. So Narada Muni, he went to see Lord Shiva. And when he went, and he went to see Lord Brahma, I forget who he went to see first, but Brahma told him that, okay, I'm preparing to go anyway to help Lord Chaitanya. Of course, Brahma came as Haridas Thakur. Then Narada Muni went to see Lord Shiva. And when he was talking with Lord Shiva, he reminded Lord Shiva that the Lord had promised Parvati, Katyayani, that he would come sometime to distribute the mercy to everyone, give out Mahaprasadam to all the fallen souls. So Lord Shiva, he was trying to remember when this happened. So Narada Muni reminded him, remember the time when there was the time that I had listened to a class, a discussion between Krishna and Uddhava. And Krishna was being glorified by Uttama. And Uddhava glorified that just by having the Mahaprasadam, remnant flowers from Krishna or some cloth, what to speak of, prasadam, remnant food, is enough to just completely purify the devotee and give unlimited transcendental happiness. So how great Krishna was, even by a little something just touching him, that was enough to make the devotee completely ecstatic, what to speak of directly having the Lord's association. Radha Muni, after hearing this story, he became meditative and he started to think meditative. But I, traveling all over the universe, playing on my veena, chanting the holy names, experiencing a lot of transcendental bliss, but I don't get Mahaprasadam. Of course, being a great rishi, like, he doesn't need to eat also. So, but he thought, at least I should get the Mahaprasadam. So he went to Vaikuntha by his mystic powers, and he served Lakshmi for 12 years like a menial servant. Finally, Lakshmi says, what do you want? You're doing such nice service, I'll give you whatever you want. He said, I don't want anything material. All I want is the Mahaprasad remnant, foodstuff, prasadam, from Lord Narayan. Oh no, why did you do that? Why did you ask for that? Lakshmi said, there's the one thing I can't give you. Narayana forbade me from giving anyone his Mahaprasad. Isn't there anything else you want? No, I just wanted that. It's a little bit. It's a little bit something. Maybe Narayana will let you give specialism. That's all I wanted, nothing else. So Lakshmi was in anxiety. She'd given her promise, but now she couldn't fulfill it. So one day Narayana saw that she was like in a little anxiety. And so she expressed her mind to Narayana that she'd given this promise to Narada Muni. Of course, Narayana said, why do you give promises like that? You might ask for something you can't give. So anyway, one day you take it when I'm not looking. So one day Lakshmi calls Narada Muni and says, I have the prasadam for you. And one handful. Narada Muni got the handful of Mahaprasad from Narayan's plate, paid his obeisances to Lakshmi, went out. So of course he flies through the sky. So he went out into the outer space, you know, and just merely ate the Mahaprasad. As soon as he ate the Mahaprasad, all of a sudden, like, he felt this intense love for Krishna. He just started to glow like millions of suns. He started to just chant loudly, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, 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 Hare. And he just loudly chanting, he's going to the outer space. He's going like, you know, like completely ecstatic, you know. Just shouting to people, wow, what's happening to Radha Muni? And he's going, you know, all over the whole, you know, spiritual world, coming down in. So somehow he ended up going by Shiva Loka, chanting, you know, he came to see Lord Shiva. He said, Narada Muni, what happened to him, you know? Wow, he's like brilliant, like millions of suns. So Lord Shiva calls Narada Muni over, you know, and said, what happened? You're so beautiful. I never saw you so beautiful. I mean, you're just like brilliant, like anything. What happened? Narada Muni was still like in such ecstasy. He said, well, explain to him what happened, you know, how he got the Mahaprasad, everything. You know, he never felt so much ecstasy, so much love for Krishna before as getting the Mahaprasad. And he looked over to Lord Shiva, you know, really happy, smiling. Lord Shiva's like hand hanging down, angry. You know. Says, you got a whole handful of Mahaprasad and you didn't give me any? You didn't save any from me? We've known each other so long and you ate it all yourself without thinking of anybody else? How could you do it? It's totally out of your character. You're always kind. How are you this time you didn't think? Narada Muni, he didn't think at all when he got the prasad. He just... So he actually felt bad. Oh, I could have given it. I didn't think about giving it. So he was looking down, kind of feeling ashamed. I didn't give any to Lord Shiva and others. Then he saw that. Because he never knew. He didn't have time to wash anything. So he had a little speck of Mahaprasad got stuck in his fingernail. So look it! A little Mahaprasad here. Kunika matram. Little kunika. Little like a speck. Archie laughed. Give it to me, give it to me! And Lord Shiva, they gave him, you know, just like, you know, a little spequito. then took it and and he used to play on his drum and dancing. Just, I mean, I can't dance. I mean, he's beautiful, just ecstatically dancing, effulgent. Boom, boom, boom. But it's so intense. With every foot, the whole universe is boom, boom, boom. It's shaking. And then, you know, the demigods are holding. What's going on? There's tidal waves, you know, and down in Rasatala, the bottom planets, it's like, and people are just like, earthquakes going on. Mother Parvati, she says, what's going on? The whole universe is like falling apart. You know, it's not the time for the Mahapralaya yet. What is Lord Shiva doing? So he's in complete ecstasy. How do you get steady? Bow, bow, dancing. But his dancing is so intense, it's like, shaking the whole universe. So Mother Parvati, in her form as Katayani, she comes, Mother of the Universe, and she says, adore Lord Shiva, the universe is being destroyed. You're destroying the universe. You know, she's like, very grave voice, you know, frantic, trying to get him to stop. And then he hears her voice, you know, and opens his eyes, you know. She's, oh, Parvati, what have you done? You broke my ecstasy. I was in the greatest ecstasy I ever had. And you broke it. Why could have killed me? Why did you ruin my ecstasy? How could you do it, Parvati? I never had such an ecstasy before. Then she explained, I'm sorry, I'm very sorry. I wouldn't have done it if I had known, but the whole universe was shaking and people were being, you know, a lot of living entities were suffering like anything, and I thought the whole planets are going to just cave in the way you were dancing. Then he understood she was just, you know, some Mario. He's very easily pleased. He goes back to his, you know, meditative mood. My Mother Parvati, you know, my dear husband, you're always chanting Hare Krishna and ecstasy, Hare Ram. Every day you're having some chanting and dancing and ecstatically, but the whole universe doesn't like start to fall apart. What was special about this day? Then he explained that what happened, how he got to Mahaprasanarada when he was there, you know, he's saying, he was very happy, you know, to explain everything, Mother Parvati. I'm that second half of your body. Half of your body. You're always kind to me. You always have your mercy upon me. I'm with you through the thick and the thin every time we're together. Serving you like a menial servant. How is it the time you get the Mahaprasadam of Narayan, you forget about me? How come you didn't give me the Mahaprasadam? A little bit also. So Lord Shiva, he thought for a second and he said, oh, you're not qualified. Katayani, she became very angry. So what do you mean I'm not qualified? I'm a devotee of Vishnu. My name is Vaishnavi Narayani. What is I'm running the whole material world because of devotion to Vishnu. Why I'm not qualified? How do you conceive that? Then she was really angry before his that was guard, you know, really going and going. Then she took a vasa. I vow, now I know what it's like not to be deprived from the Mahaprasadam of Narayan, of Vishnu. I vow I'm going to give the Mahaprasadam distributed to everyone in the whole universe. Let the dogs and the jackals give Mahaprasadam. Wow, you know, like Lord Shiva. I mean, even, you know, when Narayana heard, wow, Mother Parvati, my external energy took a vow to give my Mahaprasadam to the whole universe. And even he came out. What's going on? And, you know, he heard everything, and Mother Parvati, she was still, you know, he didn't give me the Mahaprasadam. I'm not qualified. You tell him I'm qualified to get Mahaprasadam. You know, and then, so like Narayana had to break up the whole, you can imagine the whole universal situation when Lord Shiva and Parvati are having a spat, so. Only Narayana could intervene. So he said, I called Mother Parvati aside and said, all right, you're my dear expansion, my external energy. Certainly I'll fulfill your desire. Well, no, first he told her that, well, what do you mean, if they just smell the Mahaprasadam, people will be delivered. The whole universe will be empty. What would it be the use to? We have a universe, nobody there. There'll be no more conditioned souls. She was adamant. She said, let the universe become peaceful once.
I know what it's like not to get Mahaprasad. Why should people suffer? If they want Mahaprasad, let them have it. No one be deprived. Let it be available to everyone.
And Narayana told her that, okay, come here. I'll tell you, I can't reveal to everyone, to you. I'll satisfy your desire, I'll tell you how. Then he revealed his plan to her, how he was going to come in the age of Kali as a devotee. At that time you would see that Mahaprasada is distributed to everyone, that the mercy, the highest mercy is given to everyone. He would also be coming as Purushottama and Nilachal. So in this way, Mother Katayani's vow was to be fulfilled. So Narada Muni was explained to Lord Shiva, because of this, now this is also in fulfillment of that promise that the Lord is coming. So you have to also come. And actually in Jagannath Puri, all the prasad, after offered to Lord Jagannath, is offered to Durga in her form as Bimala Devi. Whatever prasad we get, I mean anyone gets, is what the prasad offered from Jagannath to Bimala, and then the people get it. So she gets it first, and then she's distributing it. So for us, it's Maha Maha Prasad. I don't know, there's a whole other, you know, like other details of this story, which they know in Jagannath Puri, because it's unusual that Lord Shiva is in Bhubaneswar, which is a bit far from Puri, and there's a non-different deity of Lord Jagannath there, Ananta Vasudeva, and all the prasad of Ananta Vasudeva is first offered to the Shiva, and then given out. And that we can also, Vaishnavas can take. But I don't know why Shiva is so far away from Puri, whether, you know, what's the inner reason for this? I could speculate, but that's not allowed. This is a very big pastime. In the Chaitanya books, it just tells about Lord Chaitanya coming and about Jagannath. It doesn't get into all the details. Then Bhakti Purushottam Swami said, no, this is a very well-known story in Jagannath Puri. So everyone knows this story. And that's why all the prasad is offered from Jagannath to Bimala Devi. So I didn't know that before. I knew that Prabhupada said that she would get the prasad. I didn't know all the prasad is offered to her. Prabhupada always said that they worship Bimala and Jagannath Puri, and they offer Jagannath prasad to her. He was preaching once and explained it. So even a little speck of prasad is so sacred. We have to respect prasadam so carefully. So sometimes you throw a cookie, you see the specks, and you're like, goodness, that would have been enough for Lord Shiva, half the universe. So the mercy of Krishna is coming down in the age of Kali. This age of Kali is like from every angle you're getting mercy. We get prasadam, get the holy name, we get Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement, we get the Srimad Bhagavatam. This Kali Yuga is really special. The people are so dull-headed, you know. They don't know how to take advantage. So somehow or another, we just have to go on giving them Krishna Prasadam, holy name. Let them hear the holy name in Harinam. Let them taste Krishna Prasadam. Let them read Srila Prabhupada, the Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita. Then it will eventually all have its effect. They don't even know how valuable these things are, because they're so covered over. When they are pure, when someone's pure like Lord Shiva, he takes a little speck of prasad, he's in a big ecstasy. When we're covered with the mode of ignorance and passion, we take Mahaprasad, we can only experience a very small fraction of that ecstasy. As we become purified, we can experience much more the transcendental happiness of the Lord, the love of Krishna which is in Mahaprasadam. The Lord Chaitanya came for giving out the mercy to everyone. And it's confidential service to help Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give out that mercy. Who will give out the prasad? Unless someone goes and gives it out. The more that people can take prasadam, that purifies them. The next birth they may either achieve liberation, or they may take birth as a devotee, get an opportunity to be a devotee, just by taking a little prasadam. So important, just by reading a little bit of the Bhagavatam. Little bit of this Krishna consciousness is so powerful it can counteract unlimited sinful reaction. This is a special benediction. So otherwise, although Maya is very expert in keeping people distracted, but also she doesn't object if anyone takes prasadam. If you take Vishnu prasadam, get purified by the mercy of Vishnu, she's happy. But for those that never take Krishna prasadam, never chant the holy name of Krishna, never read the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam, they don't associate, take the dust in the lotus feet of the devotees, associate with the pure devotees. For those kind of people, Maya really keeps them tied up. So we're the special contingent of Krishna's devotees, servants, to give out this mercy. The Lord Chaitanya's pastime, flood the entire world with love of Godhead. To be a qualified representative of Lord Chaitanya taught, Apuni Acharita Dharma Pori Kishika, teach others by your example. We need to chant, we need to follow the four regulative principles, we need to be strict in our personal dealings. We need to know the philosophy and repeat it properly. Then we can render this confidential service properly. Actually, life is very short. We should just concentrate somehow or another. Like Prabhupada said, the world's on fire. You're just in that mood, going with your fire engine just to put out the forest fire, put out the burning houses. Whole world is in the fire of samsara, ignorance of Krishna. They're burning, suffering like anything. Even the demigods, they were praying to Chaitanya when he was in the womb of Mother Sachi. And they said, we want your mercy. We don't need material benediction. We already have material happiness. We don't have material suffering, no disease, no old age. None of these problems exist in the heavenly planets. So we have two problems, two sufferings. One is that we are in fear of demons who attack us. So there's always a little bit of fear they may come and take us away. The second reason is that because we have so much sense gratification, we neglect our Krishna consciousness. And we get deprived from love of Godhead. We don't feel that transcendental ecstasy of love for Krishna, being preoccupied with sense gratification. And this is the greatest suffering. The demigods considered sense gratification, nice, comfortable life, unlimited, you know, gratification for all their senses, to be like a suffering, because it was depriving them from achieving real love for Godhead, the real transcendental happiness of love for Krishna. So we should remember that sometimes devotees, they go after material happiness. Even sometimes you hear someone say, I've worked so much for Krishna, I put in my dues, now it's my time to enjoy. And this one really stumped me for a while. I mean, even it bewilders me quite a bit. We know the seventh offense of the holy name is to sin on the strength of chanting. That someone thinks that let me commit a sin, later I'll chant. So logically, one knows that once I sin, once I do material sense gratification, I lose my purity, but I'll chant later and purify myself. So here's a whole new logic. I've already taken my bath, so I'm going to go out and roll in the dirt, because I'm clean enough now. I'm going to, because I purified myself enough, now I can go out and get dirty again. It doesn't logically make any sense at all. But it's like a reverse order of the seventh offense. That somehow I've done enough pious activity, enough service to Krishna, now it's alright if I go out and do sinful life. It's okay if I don't follow strictly and I can just do, you see, fruitive activity. It doesn't make any sense at all. It's a totally illogical. But the people say it with all conviction, yes, I have done my dues, now I can. It seems like a reverse of the seventh offense. Certainly it's offensive, but that doesn't even work that way. We hear about elephant bath. You take an elephant, takes a bath, comes out and throws dirt on his back. And that's criticized. So don't chant and then go out and then do misdeeds. But even then, I don't think the rishis could ever have, they didn't conceive it, that people would be so foolish to actually think that if I've done 10 years of devotional service, or 5 years, or 3 years, so now I can spend the rest of my life in sense gratification, somehow I'll get back to Godhead. It's like, totally, I mean, they didn't think anyone would be that stupid to say something like that. They could conceive that, alright, someone is doing devotional service and he gets into sense gratification, then again does some devotional service, does some sense like that. But actually someone would think that, oh, I did enough devotional service, I did enough sacrifice, lived in the temple, now let me just, you know, completely get into fruitive activity and work hard for a nice, comfortable life. It's so obvious that you're not going to go back to Godhead if you do something like that. It's just to be sheer mercy to get back to Godhead. Just complete, like Ajameel, like a shot in the dark, special dispensation. Because Krishna satisfies whatever desires you have. If you develop so many material desires in the last leg of the life, he's going to try to satisfy those first for you. Because that's what you want. So then you're going to get heavenly planets or something like that. So the demigods, they were praying We don't want any material benediction. We already got too much. What we want is love for Godhead. What you're giving out to the conditioned souls, to the ordinary human beings, please let us have this also. You know, we're up to here with sense gratification. It's depriving us of our love for Godhead. Because we're always satisfied materially. We don't get the desire for love for Godhead. This is a curse. They took it like just the worst suffering. They're praying, please have your mercy on us. This is our biggest suffering, the worst suffering. We are not experiencing love for Godhead. So we see things from the demigod's point of view, like in America, you know, the whole thing, you know, pursuit of happiness. But they misplace what is real happiness. Is real happiness just to have a nice sense gratification situation? Or is real happiness to experience love for Krishna? To be feeling separation for Krishna and ecstasy? To be relishing the association of Vaishnavas? To be hearing the holy name and dancing in ecstasy? Is that the real happiness? Obviously, that is the real happiness that people should be pursuing. Sense gratification is nothing special. Even the dogs and hogs have it in one degree. Demigods, they have it in a much, you know, more glorious or one, you know, sophisticated, glorious manner. The human beings here, you know, America's developed their sense gratification. I remember one Indian boy, I asked him, are you getting married? He said, no. I'm not interested in this ordinary seat. Ladies here. So what do you want? He said, well, I like to go to Swarga and have an apsara. At least if I can be born in Swarga, at least if I can be born in America. This really took me for a surprise. He thinks that America is something like Swarga Loka. Of course, better be careful which part of the town he drives in. Some places bullets are flying between the gang wars. So people have the strangest ideas sometimes. You know, they think, yeah, the material world we got here, like a Bhu Swarga or something. This is not the real purpose of life. All right, if Krishna, by one doing one's devotional service, keeping a full association of devotees, keeping a full devotional service, if somehow by the mercy of Krishna one gets money, gets financial opulence, don't have to throw it away. You can then use it for Krishna. Prabhupada never told Ambarish Prabhu that he should throw his wealth away. He says, you invested properly and you gave him so many projects to do. How he can use the wealth? You see, some people, maybe their karma, they're rich. Pandurik Vidyanidhi was rich like anything. And Kolavichya Sridhar, he worked like anything. He never could get barely just enough to pull by. Still, he'd give 50% of his income to worshipping the Ganges every day, even if it was starvation practically. He'd eat bananas. He'd just eat simple food. But he'd do his devotional service without compromise. So he got love for Godhead. Pundarik Vidyanidhi had love for Godhead. Whoever follows the principles, they get love for Godhead. They get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. But if we think that we can avoid following Lord Chaitanya, we already did our dues, or we served a few years, and then, I mean, we've been in the material billions of years. How many know how many billions of births? Unlimited millions of births. So now we have the opportunity to have a life of taking prasadam, chanting Hare Krishna, associating with the Vaishnava, hearing the Bhagavatam. Just 60 years or 50, 70 years, whatever it goes, if we remain fixed in our devotional service, then we can get eternally this nectar, this mercy. It's like there was some news report how in 1924, some, I forget what year, there was some Olympics also, they had all these Olympic stories, how one person, he ran the entire marathon, and 1 foot from the end line, he tripped and fell down and fell unconscious. He would have won it, but he missed, so someone else passed him up. Never made it. Never finish. Never get to the last foot. So the only reason I said this is a stupid thing, but the only reason I meant is that we have to finish the race. You see. Otherwise, you don't finish it this life, you've got to go back next life. So what does it make sense that I've already done my dues? We can think about what dues we did or didn't do once we reach the finish line. Before then, there's no use of just stopping and counting our laurels. And how many offenses we also commit. How many times we do some devotional service and we throw mud on ourselves. So we should be very careful to just remain focus. Take advantage of the mercy we're getting. Don't leave any scope for better safe than sorry. You know, maybe someone will still get delivered like Ajamil, but we shouldn't rely on that. We should try to just remain fixed in our devotional service and help as many other people. Also, we don't want just to get liberation, we want to get the full love for God. Because even if you go up to the Brahma Jyoti, then again you come down and as some heavenly planet, you're still back in the cycle of reincarnation, the same problem, you're not in love of Godhead. Forget Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya, as I was saying, he came down here, the avatars come down, especially to give their mercy to the conditioned souls and to protect the devotee. So since Lord Chaitanya's movement is present, he's still present also. The Lord destroys irreligious principles and establishes religious principles. If we want to get the mercy of the Lord, we can't live in some irreligious principle. For Lord Chaitanya, he's giving the purity. For him, irreligious means anything that's not love for God, anything that's not pure devotion, practically speaking, doesn't come up to the mark. He wants people to take shelter of pure devotion, the pure love of Krishna, not just be some pious sense gratifiers, fruitive workers. So you have to imbibe the mission of Lord Chaitanya and then act as a real devotee of Lord Chaitanya. If we don't, then just like we sang that song today, Udaliyaruna Purana Bhagavad, it says that one line, says, the sun is rising and everyone's busy. But then the sun already sets within no time, and then they say, oh, the day's already gone. I have no time, no time. Like this way, every day is coming and going, and we're missing our, day by day, we're missing our chance for serving Krishna. So he said, if we don't worship Nandana Sutta, if we don't worship Krishna in this lifetime, if we don't get love for Godhead in this lifetime, Yasoda Sutta, then the Puriva Pura was a Choram Laji. We're going to become Choram Laj. Laj means like embarrassment. Someone's very ashamed. And Choram means like really intense. We'll be so ashamed of ourselves and how we have right in our grips, right in our hands, in our grasp, we had pure Krishna consciousness. We had it. We let it slip through. We get stuck in some heavenly planet. Once we get our sense of it, we realize, you know, we blew it. We'll really be ashamed. Really be kicking ourselves. Did I blow it? Charamolaji. So we shouldn't put ourselves in that position. We should take advantage of Lord Chaitanya's mercy and then cling to it. Whatever toys Maya tries to distract us with, shouldn't be allow ourselves to be distracted. We should remain fixed in our devotional service. Otherwise, it's the biggest misfortune to come so close and end up so far. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any question? By reducing devotional service, I may give more opportunity for sense gratification. Krishna has given so much service that there's no time for Maya. That's also a blessing. If we became more expert, if we became more organized, then we could fit in many more things. Sometimes a person, so much service, he does whatever the authorities say, but then they don't finish the rounds or something and they start getting spiritually weak. And then they can discuss with authorities that, you know, just properly schedule their day so they have time for chanting and so on. This individual case has to be seen. Sometimes if someone does, you know, hardly any service for Krishna, spends most of the time on material maintenance activities, yet they think, well, I can't do anything. I have to simply take care of my material side. So gradually they could do. There's an effort. You know, they don't make the effort and become lazy. It says, Na koroho alas, shouldn't be lazy. Those Bhaktivinoda Thakur, everyone's busy the whole day. Same person, you know, they'll get a babysitter, they'll do something, they'll go out and get a job for their own money. But for Krishna, they say, no, I gotta do this, I can't do that. You know, they give 1,001 excuses. And once you see that they become spiritually weaker, weaker, finally they just leave the association of devotees, then you see they work like dogs just to get a few dollars, you know, to buy a new car, get a little better hi-fi set, just to, you know, husband and wife working, everyone working, finding out long hours, you know. But for Krishna, they didn't have to work so hard even. They didn't have to work. Maybe sometimes it was intense, but there was a complete, you know, program. But they found so many excuses gradually, you know. They were so clever that they got themselves out of service, weakened their own spiritual standing, and then they end up, you know, well, I did enough, now I have to look out for my... Then they, you know, well, just, you know, watch the news and the TV, right? I mean, you gotta see what's happening. Well, you know, it's a good movie on tonight. We can use it for our Krishna consciousness. And then pretty soon the boob tube never is off, you know. Just, you know, Maya's there, you know, always, you know, pulling our brain. So that we start becoming more receptive to Maya. Then they said, well, actually, we just worked for 5 years, you know, we can pay off all our bills, and then we can really take it easy. That's why they kept asking Kolavecha Siddha, why don't you just save up your money and then stop giving 50% to the temple, to Krishna, and then you'll be better off. He said, if I stop giving, then you know, who knows if I'll start again. One thing will lead to the next. Krishna wants to make me rich, I'll be rich. I'm going to give my percentage to Krishna. I said, oh, you're a fanatic, you know, a crackpot. Definitely Krishna consciousness is a totally different level of and different kind of happiness. Someone once develops the higher taste, they can tolerate any situation for Krishna. You have to get that mercy from Lord Chaitanya, get that, develop that taste. Listen, have a principle and stick to it. Like Kolavecha Siddha. Just like we have chant our rounds, if we fall behind, we have to catch up and stick to it. The only ones you start to compromise, and that's where, of course, having a spiritual master comes in. Sometimes you can organize it. All right, how much should I give? This is my finances. I want to be Krishna conscious under this circumstance. What can I, at least then, you know, general rule is there. Maybe the spiritual master will give some special dispensation. Give some. But if we have a general guideline, if we don't follow that, we don't take any special dispensation or special instruction on how to do it, then position is naturally unprotected. Hare Krishna.